Welcome to the second series of the Reworked podcast, brought to you by diversity consultancy EW Group. I'm Rachel Wilson, and every fortnight I'll be speaking to CEOs, HR leaders, and workplace activists about the steps they are taking to reform and rework organisational culture. So I'm here today at Waitrose headquarters in Bracknell, John Lewis Partnership headquarters, with Helen Hyde, who is acting partners counsellor for the John Lewis Partnership and has been working within the organisation for 31 years. Wow. Formerly lots of different roles, but personnel director of Waitrose for a number of years as well. So hello, Helen.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to the Reworked podcast. I've driven past this building many times because I live really close by and often wanted to come in and speak to somebody here about how this organisation works, because Waitrose is, and the John Lewis Partnership is so, in terms of a brand, its values come across probably more strongly than anybody else. You know, I think as consumers we understand well your structure, the principles, the values of this organisation. So we've decided to talk about, to focus on the values, and that's obviously a key part of your work here, working with the partners. But before we do that, let's just start with a little bit about what you do as acting partners counsellor, if that's okay.
Of course. It's the most peculiar job title in the world and a really unique role. But we are a co-ownership of 83,000 partners. We are all partners, those of us that work in the organisation. And that means that, as I say, because we own the business, we have democratic structures that mean that partners have a say and that their voice can be heard. And so my team, part of my team, run those. They make sure that those meetings work well, because we have three governing authorities, unusually. So we have a chairman, of course. We have a partnership board, and I sit on that board as an independent voice for partners. But we also have something called the Partnership Council, and that is 58 elected partners who come together formally four times a year, but actually quite often more often than that, to talk to the executive, to actually talk to them about issues that they think that they may want to hear. The executive actually consult them quite often, and also they have some voting rights. So the recent changes in our pension scheme had to be agreed by the Partnership Council. And they voted unanimously on those changes, even though it meant quite a cut in the provision for partners. So, you know, they are very thoughtful as a group about their responsibilities to us as a co-owned organisation. So I'm also the critical friend of the chairman and the executive board. So I'm there to sort of be a sounding board for them, and to help support them, but also sometimes, if I'm frank, to be quite a thorn in their side if I don't think things are going the way they might in parts of the organisation. And I have a duty to kind of feed to the chairman anything that I think he should know, even if he doesn't want to hear it. So it tries to kind of keep him a little bit on the straight and narrow, but also it gives him an opportunity to talk to somebody within the organisation that is sort of completely objective. And so we quite often, you know, have conversations about things that are in his head before he's even had conversations sometimes with the executive.
Wow, what a fascinating role. Sort of like the linchpin between the senior executive and these 83,000 partners. And the values themselves. So the John Lewis Partnership, it seems to me, it hinges very strongly on its values. Let's start with talking about what those values are, because there's five of them, aren't there? And I believe created by the partners for the partners.
Yeah, that's right.
So what are the values?
So we have five, as you say, and they came about because while we have them sort of running through, actually, if you said to partners a couple of years ago, what are our values? They'd all probably say something slightly different, although along the same lines. So we decided to actually articulate them really clearly, and we actually sort of went out to partners and said, what do you think they should be? We got loads of feedback, and then we sort of worked with partners to create five. So they are: do right, be yourself always, we, not me, all or nothing, and give more than you take. So very simple language that anybody can understand. And we start now to really, you know, this year we start to have real conversations at appraisal level, not just about what you do against those values, but how you do it. And this is the whole point about the partnership, is that, you know, in all the time that I've worked here, it's not just what you achieve as a leader or as a manager or as a partner, it is how you do it. And people will talk about the partnership way of doing things. And, you know, what I mean by that is that I think we're a very low ego organisation. So people with personal agendas, people with personal egos, don't tend to join, or if they do, they don't last very long, because we are very team-based. This is about greater good. This is about all of us working together to achieve more. And that's incredibly kind of supportive and actually quite liberating in a way, because actually you then can work with your team and get the most out of your team with all of those wonderful skills and experiences that they bring, and not just necessarily with their specialist label.
Yeah, that
makes sense.
Yeah. Great. So those values, those five values, are, I'm sure you've been doing, as an organisation, lots of work on interpreting those. From a diversity, I'm always, when people tell me their values, I'm always thinking about them from a diversity and inclusion perspective, and almost all of those speak very clearly about diversity and inclusion, don't they? I mean, do right, be yourself. There's lots in there that's pointing us in that direction. What do they mean to you personally?
So, I think it's wonderful. I think we've come an extraordinary way, you know, in this organisation. If I think about my time in kind of 30 years, and how, if I'm frank, while we were, I think, quite liberal in terms of being quite open-minded, because our founder was very kind of open-minded in many ways, actually we were very white, middle-class, middle-aged, quite frankly. And when I joined the organisation, for example, there were no women running John Lewis shops, and I think there were only two female Waitrose branch managers. And that has completely turned on its head now. And certainly, if you look at our kind of top leadership team, it's pretty much 50-50, which is great. So from a sort of, you know, male-female perspective, great. More to be done, particularly around kind of our ethnic diversity, for particularly sort of senior leaders. And we know more to be done there, but lots of encouragement going on at the right levels to start to really kind of bring people through. And of course, you know, our new chairman, being both a woman and being a black woman, is, you know, it's I think tremendous. We're really looking forward to welcoming Sharon next year into the organisation. And I think, I think for me, the great thing, the one I love the most, is be yourself always. Because for me, diversity, actually every single person is unique. So we can put labels on diversity, but actually the most important thing is that you allow people to bring the very best of themselves to work every single day. And, you know, the question I often ask people, and I do quite a lot of coaching within the organisation, is, you know, would your friends and family recognise you at work? Because actually I want the same person, to come through the door. Because then actually you will bring your very best self. And it's a journey I've personally been on, because I discovered, when my son was diagnosed with being extremely dyslexic about 10 years ago, and as he was going through all the tests, I sat there thinking, that's really interesting. And I'd known, I think, that I always think differently, and I'd known that my spelling was pretty pants, even though my degree is in English, and that sometimes I find, you know, rows and rows of figures very complex, but I could make connections in ways that other people couldn't. And suddenly I kind of thought, oh, this is interesting. And I took some tests myself and discovered that I too was dyslexic. And it was extraordinarily liberating, because it was like, now I understand why sometimes I just feel very different. But I was also anxious, because it was a label. And I was sort of, you know, by that stage, I was already sort of reasonably senior in the organisation. And it was, I'm not sure I really want to tell people.
How do I even start that conversation?
And what will people think? Will people view me differently? Will it mean that I I don't have any more promotion prospects because actually people will subconsciously be kind of going, well, she's dyslexic. So actually, sometimes people put it as being not very bright, you know, rather than actually you have this brain that just works in a different way. It's wired differently, and that's actually can bring amazing things to do. So I didn't talk about it for really many years. And then about, 4 years ago, when Will Collins became the managing director of Waitrose, and I was then the personnel director, he told me in a passing conversation that somebody very close to him was dyslexic. So I thought, well, actually, Rob probably does understand. And I said to Rob, well, I kind of get that, because I said, I haven't really talked about it, but, I've done some of the tests and I'm dyslexic. And he said, I think I kind of knew that.
Oh, really?
And he said, but I don't have you sitting around the board table to, you know, do resumes of, you know, lots of deeply financial things, because I've got people that can do that. But you can read a room and you know, the way that you think about people, and you know, actually, I really value that because it brings diversity. And so, in a sense, having that air cover,
a great response from him.
Was amazing. I mean, he's a fantastic guy. And so, we had a network group for kind of, for thinking. And so we do a week called Bring Yourself to Work Week. Mm-hmm. And in that week, I did quite a long post about, you know, this is me. And I remember putting my finger on send and thinking, oh, goodness, you know, I don't know what I'm going to release here. And, of course, I had the most extraordinary amount of support from senior leaders, from partners right the way through the business, kind of going, oh, my God, this is just amazing that somebody senior in the organisation has kind of said this, because I'm dyslexic and, you know, and I had one particular email from a senior director who said, I've been dyslexic, I am dyslexic, and every evening I go home and my wife helps me write email replies and she helps me, you know, because I've never wanted to admit that I'm dyslexic and I need help. And tomorrow I'm going to go and talk to my boss.
Wow.
So it's a sort of, you know, for me there's a power in a sense having that courage to be yourself always.
Yeah.
And sometimes it does take courage if you are gay or transsexual or whatever. Sometimes it takes quite a brave step to do it. And yet what's fascinating is that as a society, I think increasingly we become not just accepting but welcoming. And I've seen a real difference within the partnership in a fantastic way, and I think I really, really welcome that.
So thank you for sharing that personal story, Helen. I really appreciate that. And so that you feeling able to disclose that information about yourself in the business, that was at a time when Be Yourself was one of the values?
It was before that.
Oh, before that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's so important, isn't it, for senior people, as you say, to speak out about themselves and to show that leadership so that other people can
feel
like
that. And I think if you can show that you are very human too, then people connect with you so much more strongly, and again it allows them, it gives them permission to absolutely be themselves and to bring the very best of themselves to work and to feel less concerned about, you know, the bits that maybe they do less well.
Great, so it's clearly very important that values are lived within an organisation and at all levels.
Yes.
How do you, particularly with leaders, how do you hold them to account on the values?
That's a great question. So as I've explained, we do both the what and the how in terms of our appraisal process. And we have a number of ways of kind of understanding the how people do things. So we do have an annual survey, your voice survey, and we've kind of broken that down into, you know, sort of by branch level so that we can understand within a branch. And there are very definite kind of questions around, you know, management and leadership. We pick it up through so each branch also has something called your voice, which is the first layer of our democratic sort of structures. So that means that unit manager meets with elected representatives from across their unit, their branch, who will talk to them about, you know, how things are going. And I have a team of democracy coaches that kind of go out across the country. And we have a kind of, we have a heat map.
We could use some democracy coaches in this
country. Yeah, we could. And they have like a heat map, and they will literally say, these branches are fantastic, you know, the relationship is exactly where it should be. That leader is absolutely living these values, they are listening to their partners, they're encouraging them, through to those that, for whatever reason, where it's not working so well, and they may need to focus with that leader to, and of course that leader's line manager, because they'll be working with them too, to kind of go right. Maybe they're new to the organisation, or maybe they are a, you know, they're a great trader and they drive for results, but actually, you know, they need some help with kind of being coached into helping to understand the other part, essential part of leadership for us, being kind of, you know, specialists in people, as we describe it. So
how fascinating. So all that structure, have you, and the data that you're able to then pull together across, you know, a huge organisation, have you managed to benchmark your self against anybody else in terms of partner engagement? And
yes, we look at sort of external benchmarking, and I mean, what's been interesting is that we have a question which is, I have a voice in the partnership, I can be heard in the partnership, and that that those scores have gone down over recent years, and I think that is because we've almost, because of where retailing is, we've had to become more centralised, we've had to become more efficient. And, you know, our partners, I think, feel under greater pressure than they have before. But it's something that we are having really active conversations about, because, you know, that really, that worries us. Because, you know, I think we have a reputation for, you know, great customer service, but that only happens because of our amazing partners. And, you know, if those partners are not feeling engaged or not feeling great advocates for the business, that, of course, will start to show. So it's something that we are, you know, really, really thoughtful about, because, you know, our principle one is about, you know, the happiness of partners. We have a written constitution, and there are seven principles. And the first is that we exist for the happiness of our partners. And their sort of worthwhile and satisfying employment in a successful business. Now, clearly, we need to be a successful business, otherwise we can't offer employment. So, you know, it's quite an interesting kind of balance. But it is not, we need to be profitable at all costs. That is not what the partnership is about. Because we don't have shareholders, you know, because actually we have owners, the partners. So it's an interesting tension sometimes.
It really is. I'm talking about interesting tensions. I'm just so interested in your job, because it seems to me there's loads of interesting tensions in your job. As you say, being the critical friend to the chairman or chairperson, and representing the value, the partnership. What do you do when values are being approached differently in different parts of the organisation, or there's a misalignment going on? How do you tackle that in your job?
So we will want to do that, as I say. So we have democracy coaches. We will have, you know, we will obviously have conversations with the with those line managers. If we believe that actually there is a particular part of an organisation, and I'm, you know, for example, you know, bits of the supply chain or whatever, or it could be, you know, something going on within retail, then, you know, then it is my duty to be kind of talking to that. And talking to you know, the executive around where we see the issues, why we think they've happened, and some suggestions for what, you know, we believe needs to happen to you know, alleviate those. And you know, in my experience, the vast majority of the time, the executive will always listen to that and act upon it, because you know, we're the sort of, you know, we are the sounding, but we are, you know, because we can be independent, we can go where we want. Actually, you start to really get a sense of where things are going really well. I mean, I can walk into a shop and I can tell you within 5 minutes if that's a happy shop or not, because, you know, you only have to look at The body language of partners, how they talk to each other, how, you know, managers talk to partners. Mm. You know, and I can do it in any shop. You know, I can walk in and kind of go, this is a great vibe in this shop. Yeah, this is a real team.
Mm. And customers pick up on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I walked into a fashion shop fairly recently, you know, another thing to do with John Lewis, and it was brilliant. You know, you could just tell that there was this great vibe within the shop. And then I went into another supermarket, not Waitrose, and you know, it clearly, for all sorts of reasons, something wasn't right. Mm. So you know, as a customer, you can tell.
Mm.
You can tell if you're looking for it.
Mm. So so the values then, you've got your five values.
Yeah.
How I suppose as a kind of final question, really, what's the longevity of company values, do you think? I mean, how many years is it since you created those five?
So it's only been a couple of years for us, sort of 18 months or so. But I think, as I say, the people looked at those and they didn't go, oh gosh, those are new.
No.
We just had
quite articulated
it. We just hadn't quite articulated it in that with that clarity. So nobody sat there and kind of went, oh, those are different or new. They had, I think, always been around. I mean, I think I was looking back and thinking, oh, my sort of 30 years, would I have recognised that on day one as a trainee? And I think I probably would have done. You know, I think, probably be yourself always may have been slightly less then, because I think we had a sort of certain ideal of a partner. And somehow you were, you know, certainly I felt as a trainee I had to sort of fit into a bit of a mould. But that's sort of gone now. But all of the others, I think that those, you know, we've always been, as an organisation, we've always wanted to do right, you know, our credentials by, you know, our customers and our suppliers and, you know, what we do in terms of, you know, responsible sort of, you know, farming and ethical sourcing. You know, we not me, as I said, there's always been a very great team ethic. All or nothing, that's about, you know, putting in the whole of yourself into work. And, you know, and you see that because partners don't just rock up and do the day job, but they get involved in, you know, the clubs and societies that we have and in our democracy and they just, you know, they want to, you know, the partnership can take over your life in a very positive way.
Yeah, that's a commitment piece,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. Absolutely. And they give more than you take. I think people, you know, as I say, want to, you know, people are always going the extra mile. And that's not just people in head office or senior leaders. You know, I was in a shop on Valentine's Day this year, and there was a lady doing some great things with the flower displays, and her branch manager, who I was talking to, said, oh, hang on a minute, she shouldn't be in today. And he went and had a woe, and he said, it's your day off. And she said, I know, I will go home in a minute. Said, but it's fine. And I had to just come in and make sure they all look fabulous. Then I'll go. You know, and that was, you know, a partner who is just a, you know, a non-management partner, but has taken that much pride in what they do.
Mm. So the values then, from your perspective, are... they're very, very deeply held. They're intrinsic to the organisation, and they don't, even though, as you said earlier in our conversation, the culture might have changed at the John Lewis partnership, and the makeup of the senior leadership team now represents that. The values don't necessarily shift.
No, I don't think they do, and I think if you can really hold those very dear and make them real for everybody in the organisation at whatever level, whether they've been here, you know, 2 days, you know, 2 weeks or 20 years, actually that it gives everybody the framework by which, you know, they can do their very best work. And that's what all of us, you know, should be striving to do.
Well, that's a beautiful place to leave it. Thank you so much, Helen. No. It's been a real pleasure and a treat to hear about the inner workings of such a great organisation. So congratulations on everything you've achieved, and look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah. Thank you, Rachel. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
I hope this episode gave you some ideas that you can replicate in your own organisation. We'd love it if you could leave a review and also subscribe to Reworked so you don't miss our next episode. Diversity and inclusion at work has never been higher up the agenda. The EW Group team includes learning and development specialists, facilitators, researchers, and analysts, all with deep expertise in equality, diversity, and inclusion. If you think we can help you rework your own culture, please get in touch.